Welcome to Body Sculpt of New York, 6 weeks to fitness podcast, where we hope to inform, motivate, encourage, and inspire you towards living a healthier lifestyle. And now, here's your host, the president of Body Sculpt of New York, Vince Ferguson.
Hi, I'm Vince Ferguson. Welcome to 6 Weeks to Fitness, episode number 53. Thank you so much for tuning in. In this episode, I will be joined by Kobe Randolph, the newest addition to TV One's hit reality series, Hollywood Divas. During the interview, Kobe will share what it's like working opposite Golden Brooks, the show's primary character. Kobe will also share what life was like growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, attending Tennessee State College and owning his own nightclub at the age of 22. Kobe's meteoric rise to fame was chronicled in his critically acclaimed autobiography, The Champagne Life, for which he received an NAACP Image Award nomination. The Champagne Life highlights the relationships Kobe has established with the entertainment industry's elite and the sacrifices he undertook to establish them. Kobe will talk about the company he started 4 years ago called the Randolph Branding Company, which now has offices in Chicago and Los Angeles. He will also share what he does to stay healthy and fit while on the go and so much more. This is a very inspiring episode on what you can accomplish in life if you just dream big enough and believe in yourself. Now remember the words of Jim Rohn, who said, "Learning is the beginning of wealth. Learning is the beginning of health. Learning is the beginning of spirituality. Searching and learning is where the miracle process all begins." And now that's worth thinking about. Welcome back to 6 Weeks to Fitness. Growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, Kobe Randolph was always the life of the party. And at age 15, he turned his reputation into a business and began promoting. The business grew while attending Tennessee State University, where he graduated with honors. It was there that he introduced his now world-famous alter ego, DJ K Love. Kobe's vast knowledge and love of various genres of music broadened his appeal as he spun for fans around the world. And at age 22, he opened Rain Nightclub and became America's youngest nightclub owner. In 2011, Kobe's rise to fame was chronicled in his autobiography, The Champagne Life, for which he received an NAACP Image Award nomination. The book highlights relationships Kobe established with the industry's elite and the sacrifices he undertook to establish them. It is a raw, honest guide for anyone who has a dream fueled by hard work and ambition. 3 years ago, Kobe opened the Randolph Branding Company with offices in Chicago and Los Angeles, where he continues his passion for music as one of the most sought-after music consultants in the industry. He has partnerships with most of the major labels, including Atlantic Records. Kobe will make his debut appearance in season 2 of TV One's hit reality series, Hollywood Divas, airing on August 5th, 2015. He joins the cast as he begins dating the show's primary star, actress Golden Brooks. I am pleased to have Kobe Randolph on our 6 Weeks to Fitness podcast. Kobe, how you doing, my brother?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm blessed. I'm glad to be in the house, definitely.
Well, I can attest to the fact that you're blessed, man. I can see from the work that you're doing, you're blessed and highly favored.
Yeah, definitely.
And you are an amazing role model for young people, man. So I can't wait to get into some of these questions I have for you, okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm with it. Let's shoot. Let's go. Let's get to it.
Okay. Now, I understand you grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, what was life like that growing up in Memphis?
Oh, Memphis is a very interesting place, man. Because it's like, it's the heart of America. It's the heart of the South. And it's like, you know, it's like a big, small city. So it's like, you know, you get like the small town feel, but it's not that small. I mean, it's a decent sized city. So, you know, it takes more than a smile to make it out of an environment like that. But it's, you know, some of the trials and tribulations I went through, you know, made me the person I am today, built a lot of character. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's a great place to grow up, definitely.
Oh, good. So let's talk about that now. Did you come from a large family?
Well, see, the majority of my family, it was funny because, like, the majority of my family was, like, in Florida and in Texas. So, you know, my parents, you know, their jobs were just in Memphis. So it was mostly just me and my immediate family in Memphis. And then I just had a lot of adopted family. Like, my best friends turned into, like, their mothers became my aunties. So it was, like, Christmas or Thanksgiving. I'm going over, like, you know, 10 different people's homes. So that was the type of environment it was.
Wow, a big party, huh?
Yeah, it was a big party, definitely, yeah.
So who would you consider your role models through all this?
Well, you know, it's interesting because coming up, you know, I looked up, I never, you know, I always wanted to be in entertainment, but I never wanted to really be, I'm not going to say not talent, because I think what I do has a specific talent, but a tangible talent that most people relate to, like, you know, Michael Jordan or Michael Jackson or, you know, I never had a desire to go play professional ball or go sing or go act. I always wanted to be a influential mogul, you know, in the business. So I looked up to, like, you know, Puff and what Jay was doing at the time and Russell Simmons. So those were pretty much, you know, my idols as I grew up, you know, mimicking what they were doing at the time.
Oh, most definitely. I see that you actually followed that same path, too. Now, we're going to talk about that. That's excellent. Now, I understand you attended Tennessee State University. What was your major?
I was a mass communications major, but to be honest with you, I made my sole decision on where I went to college just based off of my business model. So, you know, when I was in high school, you know, I was pretty popular in the city of Memphis, but, like, not like for... Like, when I was 16, I knew the mayor of the city, like, on a first-name basis. So, you
really?
Know, yeah, like, I would, like, you know, go out to eat at certain steakhouses or restaurants, and then I see the mayor, and then I buy his food. I was like, you know, tell the waiter that's on me, you know. So I was,
really?
I was quite popular. So, and saying that to say, you know, when I was DJing in high school, you know, I used to have, like, 1,000 people come see me DJ when I was, like, 16, 17. And then, you know, I was like, okay, how do I scale this and, you know, form the LLC and turn it into a business? And I just really picked the college that was going to be the most conducive for my business model. And it happened to be Tennessee State. So I had, like, a built-in following of students that would go there from my hometown. And then combined with, you know, where the record labels sent artists for, like, college tours. So that was pretty much my primary reason for attending university, just to launch the business.
Really? So that was your reason for attending. That's an amazing business strategy there.
Yeah, sort of like, you know, Facebook meets, like, Rockefeller Records or something.
Exactly. So you're telling me that you knew the mayor on a first-name basis.
Yeah, you know, it was crazy. It was like, you know, now, mind you, have to understand, my parents, they know nothing about the entertainment industry. They practice medicine. So they, like, you know, they were like, what is our son doing? Like, you know... They come from, like, the world of the sciences, and I'm like, ah, that's cool, but I think I want to go do this hip-hop thing. And at the time, like, you know, we knew rappers, but you didn't know, like, famous executives like that. So, you know, I would be out networking in the city, and I remember one time, like, I was out at dinner with my parents, and then the mayor came up to the table and was like, Mr. Randolph, how are you doing today? Are these introducing to your family? And then they looked at me like, what is our son into?
Exactly. The mayor comes up to your table.
Yeah. I think it was like a week after I bought him dinner or something like that.
Oh, man. But how did you know to smooth like that, to talk to people like that, to get involved? Where'd you get that from, man, that courage?
Man, I really think it was just a big imagination. I think it was a combination of just having, like, a very big imagination and really that. I mean, I watched a lot of old films and a big imagination, to be honest with you. And then, too, I realized, like, I didn't really fall into the systems of anything, like the systems of titles or the systems of believing, like, in race and titles and, you know, genres of sex. I just always looked at human beings being human beings, and, like, whether you're 14 or 24, you know, the brain works the same way. So I just wanted to make connections with people who are influential and more powerful and more experienced than I was. And I didn't think you had to start thinking that way when you were 25. You can do it at 15. So
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, that was my strategy.
Man, but that's an excellent strategy because it helped propel you to where you are today. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it definitely worked out.
Oh man, please. Now, I know that even though you focused, you had your own business strategy even before you went to college, but you were able to graduate with honors at the Tennessee State, right?
Yeah, you know, it was a journey. I'm not going to say it was like, you know, I cannot believe 3 years. It was definitely a journey, but, you know, actually, what's funny is they circled back around and gave me the degree, gave me the honorary degree. You know,
really?
Yeah, because I had left at first and just was starting a business, and they circled back around and was like, you know, we want you to have this completing, and gave me the honorary degree.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing, man.
Yeah,
amazing.
But you know, and it was just like a couple of credits shy, anyways. But at the time, it was like, you know, entrepreneurship is time sensitive. So I had just got a key at a deal at Universal with cash money, and then that had me on the road a lot, and I was doing some things. So I think they started to sort of hear, like, oh, wow, this guy who was, like, a couple of credits short, like, he needs to go ahead and complete this thing, and he's doing great things. This will be good. Look at the university, and they made it happen.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, do you, as a result of this, do you go back to support the college in any way? Do you support them financially or with your appearances, anything like that?
After my book came out, I started doing a lot of public speaking at universities, and especially with entrepreneurship, because it's such this intangible thing that a lot of people don't understand. Like, two things people really don't understand, entrepreneurship, and they don't understand entertainment. So, you know, with me sort of both of those things being my focus and having to, and there's not a lot of literature on it too. So sort of like carving out a blueprint that like someone in high school could understand or college, I thought it was my responsibility always to go back and speak and just say the things that you may not learn in college. Not that I think they're trying to hide them from you. I just think that they may not know because it's an experience-based theory.
Right. Okay, yeah. But that's true. I mean, they don't set out to hide the information, but it's up to you to find the information.
Exactly. You know, I think, you know, no class will be able to teach you to have the intuition or gut instinct like, you know, you experiencing it. Like my mother used to say, there's no lesson like a ball lesson.
Yes. But you're able to take that man and run with it, and that's what's so amazing, you know? And at 22, you became America's youngest nightclub owner. Explain that.
You know, it's funny because at a night at like 20, I had an opportunity to get a person a record deal, and I thought that was huge, you know, to manage somebody who was signed. And, you know, at that time, I had no idea that I would be in a position or even have the knowledge to open up, you know, a business like that because, you know, hospitality industry is like number one selling business, and you know when you just hear nightclub, it sounds exciting, but then a lot of people are just scared to make the investment because it's so many intangibles of what makes it successful and what doesn't. So, you know, I had a reputation of anytime you know I would DJ, I would throw a party, you know, 1,000, 1,500 people would show up, and I had built that reputation, you know, consistently over the years. So what, you know, I had investors sort of coming at me, like, hey,
really?
Have you ever thought about doing a nightclub? You know, we'll be interested in partnering with you on that. And when I left managing the artists I was managing, I was like, well, I guess I can go back to school and sort of pick up where I left off. And I was like, I need to come back with something, like, exciting that brought me back. So I was like, well, I'll open up a nightclub. And so, yeah, it sort of didn't, it was surreal up until the moment I like signed the lease. Then I was like, well, I got it. I guess I got to deal with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So but how long did you own it though? Do you still own it or was it just
No, I got rid of it. It was just a 3-year lease. It was just a 3-year lease on the building. And the thing with nightclubs is, especially it was 10,000 square feet and it was like in the middle of like downtown Nashville. So, with that type of business, you think the things that make it difficult is oh, we have 2,000 people in here tonight. That's sort of autopilots itself. That's not really the difficult thing. The difficult thing is the next day you get a call at 2 a.m. from the fire department because like a homeless guy has like knocked out a window and is like vandalizing, or you know, you have a plumbing problem, it's like a water leakage, or you know, you book a big concert, you get there to open up and then, you know, the AC's out and it's August. Those are the things that will make a 22-year-old go crazy. So, you know, like, those are the things, like, I'm sitting in class, and then I get a call from my attorney, you know, that we got to go handle something with the city. I got to be in court, you know. So those were the things at 22, you know, that made me, like, wow. Because at 15, I thought that was, like, the dream job, like, you know.
Yes.
And at 24, I was like, I've had my club experience. I think we're going to get into a different business.
Yes. But the thing is, man, Kobe, you did it, though, you know?
You had
the experience. That's amazing. How many people can say I owned a nightclub, you know?
It was cool because it was like I was in college and I would be in class and then everybody would be talking about this party that was at my club. And then they would see me at the party because, like, they would see me in English class sitting next to me. And then they will come to this party, this huge party that's at this club, and then they'll see me, and I'm like, hey, you want a drink? And the girl's like, yeah, I want a drink. I'm like, okay, let me get you one. And she thinks I'm going to buy a drink, and then I just go behind the bar and grab a bottle of champagne and give it to her. She's like, you're bold.
That's,
like, it's cool.
That's amazing, man. But also, the stress of having that type of responsibility at that young age, right?
Yeah, it was 70% that. It, like, the fun stories got old very quickly once I had to deal with the responsibilities and the bills. I mean, the overhead was just crazy to keep that. It's a machine, so to keep that thing up and running, I mean, the overhead would just be crazy. And but it was an experience that you know, I definitely learned and grew from. And if I ever want to get back into you know, the hospitality business, I mean, I can do it from the ground up. I know the ins and outs of it. You know, so. I'm blessed to have that experience.
Most definitely, man. Like I said, you're very blessed and highly favored. That's what we're talking about today. Kobe Randolph. Listen, now, who is DJ K Love and where did that name come from?
Well, you know, that's sort of like, you know, I guess my alter ego persona, you know, that sort of takes over, you know, my personality when I'm on stage or just sort of when I'm in public, you know. And it's like, you know, everyone has seen me DJ since I was a teenager, and K Love is just sort of this, you know, this life of the party, the Renaissance guy, jack of all trades, who's sort of like, you know, super big personality, and just always like pushing the needle on the culture. So that's the best way I can describe that.
See, I understand you are a worldwide celebrity. Have you been in other countries as well, or just the States?
Well, yeah, I've been in other countries. You know, I had an opportunity to be in Paris and a couple other places, and they respect the art. They like hip hop. I'm going over to Uganda to DJ in a couple of months. But, you know, and I've DJed pretty much everywhere in the States and done, like, you know, a lot of big corporate events. You know, the thing with a hip hop DJ is, you know, I'm very, very, skeptical about what I touch now, because with a hip hop DJ, you know, it's a cap on how much you can charge someone, because it's not like, you know, EDM music where it's like Calvin Harris or Avicii who's, you know, DJing for 200,000 people. You know, there's not a 200,000 people, you know, hip hop urban nightclub like that. So,
no.
You know, the most you can get as a hip hop DJ is, you know, 15 to, like, you know, 50 grand. And it's cool, but it's not like when you see what someone like Calvin Harris makes in a night, you just you have a different perspective, you know, or how you want to spend your time. But I mean, I just really do it for the art. I mean, it's still like my first love. And, you know, for me, it's more so when the right event, you know, and it makes sense, I'll do it more than even the money. Like, I sometimes will tell charities and, you know, and nonprofits that, look, you know, just take care of my travel and stuff. I'll just do it, you know, and just do it as a tax write-off versus trying to charge some crazy price. because, you know, I love it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, man. That's another one of your callings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's good. But let's talk about your autobiography called The Champagne Life. Talk about that. That's a book that you wrote. And what is that about?
Correct. And I'm in the airport, actually, so I hope the background noise is not too bad.
Oh, I hear that. I hear. Where are you traveling to?
I'm in New York right now. I'm at JFK, and I'm flying back to L.A.
Oh, you're in New York. Get out. Well, actually, that's where I am. I mean, wait, what's going on here? I could have met up with you, man.
Yeah, exactly. I wish they would have told me because I could have just came by the studio or whatever. But, yeah, I had to come up here. I'm signing this kid to Universal Records. But anyway, yeah, but the Champagne Life, I wanted to do something that, you know, it's sort of like writing in literature. It's history, and you write yourself in history through literature. So, you know, whatever I did that I thought was significant on Earth, I didn't want to wait, you know, for someone else to tell the story years later, and it loses, you know, lose my voice in it, and it's someone's interpretation of what they think happened. You know, I wanted to take the time and sit down and write my story to share with others, and I wanted to do it at a time to where the journey was still going. I didn't want to wait till I was 40 years old to talk about something that happened when I was 15, because I just think it loses the validity a little bit. So the book followed me from age 15, from when I first started getting into entertainment, to 22, the day the nightclub opens. And it's sort of just a coming of a time tale about a kid in a small town with, you know, big dreams of, you know, being a player in the entertainment industry and sort of what he goes through. It you know, briefly, it's sort of like Forrest Gump meets Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So, and so it's like this high school kid who's like literally a high school student by day, and at night he's like a mover and shaker, like in the like young, you know, in the young adult scene in Tennessee. And it was a time where, you know, I looked pretty mature as a kid. So it would be, like I said, I would be at dinner with the mayor and the mayor not know that I'm in high school. You know? So, and then I remember when I was a senior in high school, you know, one day, and I won't spoil too much of the story, but one day, instead of going to school, it was like, you know, around graduation time, and I was like, I really have to, you know, figure out what I'm going to do with this entertainment thing. And because I didn't live on the coast, I lived in middle America, you know, resources were limited. So instead of going to like the senior picnic one day we had, I like went to the airport, hopped on a plane and flew to LA. Not knowing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really? Oh man.
Yeah.
You flew to LA?
I like literally like everyone was going to school to go like on a field trip or picnic. I like went to the airport, hopped on a plane, flew to LA. Wound up getting to LA, went to an award show, got cool with some more people, and it's crazy. Some of those people I still do business with today. I remember one of the people who I became friends with on that trip was the actress Megan Good. And then when I was back in school on Monday, you know, because I was talking to her about this endorsement deal I wanted to do with her, and they were like calling my phone, like she was calling me, but I wasn't picking up because I'm in English class, I'm a senior in high school. And she was calling me. And then, like, her managers were calling me, and they were like, hey, you know, we want to get the paperwork over to you. We want to move forward in the deal. And I had to, like, I had to make an excuse to go to the restroom and try to, like, close the deal from, like, the restroom of my high school. So, but, yeah, so that's sort of what it's like.
Crazy.
In the book, it has, like, it's 17 chapters with 17 different rules. Rules about, you know, entrepreneurship and the voice of a teenager, because I don't think that perspective has been told before.
Never. This is a true life story as well.
Yeah, it's all factual things that, and you know, writing it was hard with like the editing because it's true events. And if it was like if I didn't almost even have pictures to sort of narrate it, it would just be a great story that you thought I made up. So luckily, for whatever reason, I always had a camera when I was doing these things, and I documented it. But yeah, it's a roller coaster ride, definitely.
This is amazing. That's an amazing book. I mean, where is it? It's on sale now.
Yeah, right? You can go to your local Barnes & Noble or just if it's more convenient, just go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, and it's right there on the book.
And you said you do a lot of public speaking.
Yeah, I've done a lot, you know, especially like when a book first came out, because a lot of people in hip-hop really supported it. LL Cool J, Kevin Lyles, Russell all supported it. So that sort of really brought a lot of attention my way, and I was doing a lot of public speaking just about entrepreneurship, especially the youth, because that's sort of my passion.
Oh, most definitely, definitely, man. You're still in touch with the Russell Simmons and LL and other celebrities like that?
Yeah, you know, because it's so crazy. It's crazy because, like, I live in, like, Beverly Hills. At the time, some of these first occurrences, I remember, you know, when the first time I met Puff, I was in high school, and I flew to Philadelphia because I heard he was going to be speaking for the weekend just to see, can I just, you know, bump into him, and I did. But, you know, some of the people, you know, when I was a teenager, I looked up to, and I thought, wow, you know,
yeah,
just being in the same room with this person is something. It's funny, they literally live down the street from me now.
is that right?
Yeah. So now we see each other all the time. Almost like, man, hey, I mean, we have the same gym membership. So
that's amazing.
You know, so, I mean, and for whatever that's worth to say,
yes,
you know, I remember, you know, looking at this person, you know, through media or reading about this person, and now, you know, they're a part of my daily routine, you know, just shows growth. I mean, I think
it just shows, especially young people, that if you can imagine it, you can be it. You can get there, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
It's all thinking here. It's all mental, you know? It's the process of time that's inevitable. We can't speed up a calendar date, but you know it's coming. So it's,
yes,
whether you're going to be ready or not for the moment, those
right
dates on the calendar are going to come. You know, you know, it's just getting over, you know, the process of time. But, you know, if you can think it, I mean, 1 + 1 = 2. You think it, you have a good strategy, it's probably going to work out for you.
Yes. I firmly believe that, man. And you're proof positive that it works. But now, how did you feel about receiving the nomination for the NAACP Image Award for your book?
It was another full circle moment, because I talk about that, me being involved in the NAACP and that award show, particularly playing a semi-part of where I got today before I was nominated. Huh. And then I'll go back and I'll mention, write this book, and I mention it, and then it gets the nomination for some of the subject that I was talking about. So, I mean, just to be, you know, even mentioned in the same sentence with some of the other contestants and from organizations like that,
yes,
speaks volume. So that was definitely a full circle moment that I appreciated.
Okay, that's great, man. But now I understand that you started a company called the Randolph Branding Company. I know you're branding your name too, the Randolph Branding Company. What? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, you know, for me, when I was first getting into hip hop, it was a certain way that we promoted and we marketed artists to take them from just being a talented person, you know, in middle America or, you know, in Brooklyn or, in, you know, Compton, to being a worldwide name. And it's a formula that goes with that.
Yes.
We could implement that formula because we had the media. We had a video, or we had the radio, or we had, you know, print media. Now, anyone who's relevant, culturally relevant in any genre of music, entertainment, or any genre of lifestyle,
yes,
has the ability to be just as relevant as a Kanye West or Barack Obama. Because now we have a situation where the same way I can promote an artist, I can promote a chef, I can promote a fitness coach, I can promote, I mean, we buy in the products and we buy in the pop culture the same way. So now that you have Instagram and you have, you know, Vine and you have Tumblr, we have the medium. It's sort of like Instagram is everyone's, social media is everyone's TV. It's like if you want to be on TV, you can do it for free. Just start an Instagram. And
yeah,
how many people follow you, that's how many viewers you have tuned into your network. And you can tell those people anything. and you can put on anything. And so with the Randolph Branding Company is taking what I discovered in the music industry and applying that formula to all walks of lifestyle and genres. And, you know, linking influential players, no matter what field they're in, to get to their next step.
Really?
Yeah. Huh.
And when did you start your company? How long ago?
I started the company about 4 years ago.
Oh, 4 years.
Yeah.
So you have a few clients.
Yeah, I have a few clients. I work, and usually what we like to do is get them to a certain point, and then they go on. And to do other great things, you know, and whatever we can provide for them, you know. And music still being the focus. You know, most of my clients are music. Most of my clients are independent artists or at least looking for a record deal or artist who has a record deal, but now he wants to get into film or TV or, you know, someone who's in fashion and they want to get their products into a film or get it to an artist. So, yeah.
Wow. Now, do you have employees working for you? Because you know, I know you can't do it all yourself.
Yeah, I have a small staff that handles everything, but I still like to be very hands-on. Like, I think one of my keys to success in getting clients is the fact that they know they're dealing with a person who's influential and who gets it versus this huge company that, you know, has enough resources to buy good real estate, you know, and make the office look nice, but do they really know what they're talking about? Are they really relevant? You know, are they really at the pulse of what's going on? I think, like, when I see people who are older than me who've done this successfully, like, you know, Steve Stout or Puff, I think that the corporations were buying into Puff, or they were buying into Steve Stout, or they were buying into Jay. They weren't really buying into this huge building.
I agree.
Yeah, you know, so that's sort of my strategy as well.
Exactly, because you are the brand.
Correct.
You are the brand. So they're buying into you, what you're able to bring to the table.
Correct.
Exactly.
I would think so.
What would you say has been your greatest challenge to success?
Well, I think the greatest challenge to success, like with any youth, would just be with any youth and any entrepreneur. One, with the youth is having the conviction and the tenacity that it takes to know that you're right even when everyone thinks you're wrong. Because that's what kills a lot of dreams. It's like, because people haven't seen it, they've never seen it happen before, or they haven't seen it happen from your community or neighborhood, and you're the one saying you're going to make it happen. I mean, people look at you like you're an alien, you know. So,
true.
You know, so the thing is that if it's like even and my parents were very, very supportive, but maybe somebody out there whose parents don't just get it yet, and it's like you know, say you want to go to the NBA, and then your mom's like, oh well, yeah, that sounds nice, but you know, 99% of people who have that ambition, that dream, don't make it. So get a plan B. I think that's horrible advice. My personal opinion, because I think that, you know, we do so much of the 99% of the people don't make it, get a plan B, that we never say, yeah, 99% of the people don't make it, but I'm quite confident that you're the 1% that is going to make it, because that 1% exists. You know what I'm saying? Whether, you know, we always tend to shine a light on the 99% that fail, but no one really talks about the 1% that makes it until it's too late, until they're already LeBron James. You know what I'm saying? So, but before LeBron James, it was still 100% out there, and 99% of people weren't going to make it, and then there was still a LeBron James before you knew his name. And so I think we need to encourage and acknowledge that 1% early, and that can be you. So I think as a youth, like me, I think, like, I've always thought I was, like, and I'm not saying it's, like, as humble as this can be, this might be an oxymoron, but I've always thought I was a genius. I have. And, you know, even though people didn't see it or people didn't, you know, I hadn't done the tangible things, I didn't have the tangible results, at the time, like, my mindset was the same. And I just, that was, like, my hardest challenge is, like, because even when sometimes, you know, shit doesn't work, I mean, things don't work, and, like, how you planned them, and then, you know, is that confirmation that you may not be as smart as you are? No, but it can sometimes come off that way. So that was very hard in just getting my mind in a place. Because once I said, I don't care about the world, and I know this is right, and I know this works, and then I started getting the proof that my strategy was right, it became easier and easier and easier. So that was probably like the biggest challenge I had.
Wow, man. But you followed that path, right? And you stayed on that path that you felt was right.
Exactly. And knowing that if it doesn't work, you know, this could lead to the next 50 years of poverty. So you have to be in a place to where, you know, having nothing, I'm very, very, very comfortable. I'm very, very comfortable just doing what I love and having nothing. Like, if I'm homeless, I'm in a shelter, I'm very comfortable. And because once you get over the fear of fear itself, can't nobody stop you. Because, you know, how can you control a person like that? He ain't scared of nothing, you know? So he's going to take every opportunity he can to better himself. So, those two things.
I love it, man. I love it. I love it wholeheartedly. Now, let's talk about your health, because you're on the go. You're a busy brother. And, you know, my podcast, we're about health, fitness. I believe your health is your wealth. You know what I mean? To be healthy is truly a state of mind, but also a state of body. You know what I mean? Taking care of your body. And so let's talk about that. What do you do to stay on top of your game health-wise?
Well, you know, I think it's funny because, you know, health, we sort of ignore it as a youth. You know, we sort of think that, you know, I'm always going to have a six-pack or I'm always going to be able to run, you know, a mile or, you know, play a full basketball game, football game. And then, like, around 26, 27, you start to move a little different. You're like, well, where does this extra weight come from? Or, like, I woke up and, you know, where did it come from? So, you know, for me, I had to sort of like, I woke up and I was like, yo, what's going on with my face? And like, why are the bags on my eyes? So I just started really watching what I ate, because I was on a, like, between the age of 22 and really 28, I was on a go so much. You know, I was like, I ain't got time to go to the gym. I don't want to play basketball. So I started trying to do something, just be active, like be consistently doing something. They gave my body exercise every day, and then just start really watching what I eat and what I put into my temple. So for me, it's like really don't do the carbs. Maybe I have a cheat day, and I'll just, you know, meat, vegetables, fruit, and then I juice a lot. Like, that's my thing. Like, I can just, you know, throw all my stuff in the mix, in the bullet or in the juicer.
Nice.
And then I juice, and then I just eat my meat, vegetables, and just try to stay away from the white stuff, you know.
Definitely, man. But that's the key, though. People don't realize that 70% to 80% of your health comes from what you eat. Mm-hmm. It really does, you know. You got to put the alkaline foods, the fruit, the vegetables, feed your body that, because that's going to give you the energy that you need. And then you work out. Your body was meant to move, okay? So we've got to move, but you've got to eat well. Also, that's the key. And you're always on the go. You're doing so much. But if you don't take care of your body, your body's going to break down eventually, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm like on this routine where I knock out like 4 miles a day. Like, I try to, you know, hike to a jog to a day. And literally, if I don't do it for 3 days, I feel it. I can see it. Like, it's like instant results. Like, once your body gets into that routine of being active and then, you know, you're on the road and you eat what you would normally eat, but you're not working out. There's no movement. I mean, you see it instantly.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying. I'm really, really big with just like consistent, because that's like, I think the hardest challenge is just being consistent. I think sometimes people are like, okay, I got to get in the gym and do something today. And they try to kill themselves for 5 hours, but then they don't want to go tomorrow because their body hurts.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, in moderation, but you got to do something, even if it's for an hour, you know, if you just have to walk for 30 minutes, an hour, that's going to help you in itself. Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to relieve stress, going to clear your head a little bit, and it's going to strengthen your heart. So why not make a little time to move? That's the key. Because as we get older, our metabolism slows down and the pounds start adding up quicker when you're not moving, when you're not eating healthy. So the key to stop that from happening is to move and to try to eat as healthy as possible. You know, don't forget to drink a lot of water, take in the fruit, the vegetables. It's going to help you think clearer, because you have a lot on your plate, man, and you want to think as clear as possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, correct. So definitely. That's, totally agree.
So this is good. I mean, this is great, man. But let me ask you, because you're doing so much, how do you, Kobe, how do you unwind? Do you have any hobbies that you're involved in?
Yeah, you know, me, I'm a very, like, therapeutic type of guy, believe it or not. So for me, it's like, even me being a DJ and a hip-hop DJ, you might not see this, but hip-hop is not even my preferred choice of music when I'm at home. Like when
really?
Like, my Saturday consists of, like, if I'm at home, you know, waking up on a Saturday, cooking brunch, and then listening to, like, Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole. Like,
you're
I'm
kidding.
That guy. Yeah, I'm that guy.
Really?
Or even on a Friday, like, Friday evening when I'm done, you know, it's, you know, let me go to the house and, you know, cook, you know, a nice meal, and I sit out with a glass of red wine and listen to Sinatra.
So that, like, that's amazing. No one would believe that.
You know, no one would believe that. I know, but and you know, I'm a really Renaissance type of guy. I appreciate a lot of like vintage culture. So so you know, because you know, and for my job, I listen to hip hop all day. I'm listening to some type of upbeat music all day. So I like timeless things, and that's something I appreciate. So and I cook. I like to say I cook pretty well. So that's like my pastime. That's how I sort of relieve my stress.
Wow, man. That's amazing, though. I can relate because I'm much older. I can relate to the Frank Sinatras and the Nat King Coles. But now with a brother like yourself tells me, I'm like, wow, that's deep, you know? But that also shows how deep you really are, you know, what kind of person you are, you know?
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
Oh, man. No, I'm totally impressed with what you've been able to create. Man, you are definitely the personification of a mogul, you know? And that's great. You're going to be around a long time. And that's a beautiful thing. I love it, man. But let's talk about the show. I understand that you are going to be on Hollywood Divas, okay, on August 5th, the season 2 debuts, and you're going to be playing a character opposite Golden Brooks. Now, how's that? How did that happen?
Well, you know, it's funny, and that's when I debuted. Like, it debuted two weeks ago, but they introduced me to the show on that day. But it's funny how it all happened because me and Golda were already cool. Me and her was already like dating, and a production company hit me up about doing a show, just you know, about my career and what I had going on. Not knowing that they were already doing a show on the person who I was dating. So
really?
I think they wanted to show more of Golden's personal life and what she had going on. And then
yes.
She was like, well, you know, this is the guy who I'm, you know, dating or entertaining or interested in. And it was like,
right.
Hold up. Like, we just talked to him about doing something on TV. And
really?
It sort of just all worked together, yeah. So,
my goodness.
It was like a small world moment, and they, you know, asked me what I thought about it, and I was like, you know, I'm a pretty honest, open person, so, you know, I had no problem doing it, and so, yeah, that's what we had.
Now, but how do you feel being involved with the lead, though? Now, that's a lot of pressure on you, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, our energy sort of matched. Like, me and Golden are a lot alike, you know, so, I mean, Golden has her ways, to be sort of demanding at times, or she can be, you know, for me, you know, I'm the man, so, you know, I can, like, put my foot down and just say it is what it is, but, you
I
know,
you.
Sometimes, like, the women that she deals with in a professional capacity, you know, they definitely feel, you know, the wrath of her, of her being a diva, I guess, but,
Exactly.
But, yeah, I have a way of gracefully, you know, relaxing her and, you know,
putting her in the check.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Wow. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun having you on the show, though, man.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I definitely think, you know, I can't give away too much. You got to watch it. But I definitely think they haven't seen anything like this, like really in reality TV as far as the lifestyle aspect to sort of see what, you know, people of color are into beyond, like, yelling and screaming and cursing and fighting. And, you know, I think
yes.
you know, our relationship adds a little bit of a taste and class to that world of reality TV.
Yeah, definitely. But now it airs on the 5th of August, right?
Yeah, the 5th of August. That's when my character is introduced to the show.
Introduced.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I'm going to make sure I put that out there for my listeners so that we can tune in. A lot of my listeners do watch the show, okay? So that's the good thing. They'll definitely tune in to see you on that show as well, for sure. Now, tell me, what are your future goals?
I have a big announcement to make. Hopefully, by the time I land in LA, I can make it. I think they're getting a contract together now.
Really?
Been recruiting a certain kid who's very talented, and hopefully we make this partnership with this label go through. It looks like it's going to be that way. And, you know, once I think he has the potential to be, you know, next MC Hammer.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
So introducing him to the world is a future goal that's almost right around the corner. And then, you know, long term is I want to just continue to push the needle of culture, just push the envelope, you know, and like, I want to do an entertainment company to where it's like film and it's TV and it's music like Sony, but it can be an independent subsidiary, but not an independent subsidiary that's sort of like mom and pop, like as far as the brand and how it looks. It's going to be, you know, no different than MGM or Sony or Universal, but it's just a smaller independent company. So that's what I'm working on right now. That hopefully we can have everything launched within by 2016 or the beginning of 2017. So.
Oh yeah, well I expect that to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you're gonna work on it, I expect it to happen. I do.
So.
I believe in you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man.
Oh no. I'm very serious about that too. Now let me ask you, because I know some of my people may want to follow you or kind of like find out more about you. Do you have your own website?
Yeah, I do. I have a company website, which is RandolphBrandonCompany.com, but I'm really easy to reach just on Instagram. So if you just go to Instagram, and it's at DJKLUV underscore. So at DJKLUV underscore. So at DJKLUV underscore. And then, you know, I respond back, you hit me, and I pretty much post my whole life on that so people can see what I'm doing on day-to-day.
Really? Okay, excellent. That's good to know. Excellent. So that's where we can reach you, man. So that's perfect. And I can't thank you enough, Kobe, man, for being on the show.
This is really, really a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
And to my listeners, I truly hope this program was informative, encouraging, and inspiring, and that you will continue tuning in to our 6 Weeks to Fitness podcast. And if you have any questions or comments, please leave them on my 6 Weeks to Fitness blog at www.6weeks.com or email me at vince@6weeks.com. Take care. Bye-bye.